This insert is brought to you by Radio K Pulpit 7 to 9 a.m. Please visit kpulpit.co.za.
Way to Scotland today to connect with Professor Dion Foster. Dion, good morning. Top of the morning to you. How are you doing down in Glasgow?
You've got a great Scottish accent. Oh my goodness.
Could you be in a more beautiful place? When you, I saw those photographs of my mouth hung open, like, what? Those places actually exist that look like, it looks like something out of a storybook.
No, it is quite, excuse me, Brad, it is quite remarkable. So Glasgow, the university in particular, is incredibly beautiful. It was built, so the university dates back to the 1540s, I think. But they moved to the place where the university is now in the mid-1800s. And Brad, if ever you've seen architecture from the mid-19th century, you know they spent money. You know?
Yeah.
These massive sandstone, Gothic-looking buildings. So it's something quite impressive.
Yeah, I'm so pleased Prof. Dion shared those photos with me. It's quite something to behold. And you imagine just the workmanship and the care and, yeah, the money that goes into creating something quite like that. Just for those wondering, what are you doing there? I'm sure you've got your hands full. Tell us quickly, what are you up to there in Scotland?
Yes, so I was. We have this partnership that's come actually since I was at Stellenbosch with University of Glasgow and with colleagues. So I was invited to deliver a paper at an event and to teach some classes. So, you know, these things sort of build collaboration and our students get to exchange. We work together on research projects. And so, you know, every now and then you get the privilege of doing this. And of course, now because I'm just down the road, you know, it's an hour's flight from Amsterdam to Glasgow direct.
Nice. Well, there you go. Thanks for letting us know what you're up to. So getting into our topic this morning, I often look at stories out of the Word and I try and see if I can see myself in them. And we've got this topic this morning makes me think a little bit of the, you know, ooh, let me take my cloak and throw it on the ground. Ooh, look, palm leaves. Here comes the king who's going to save us from Roman rule. You're coming in on a donkey. This is kind of unusual. But anyway, here he comes. Then just a few days later, shouting, crucify him, makes me think of old Peter, you know, I'll do anything for you, Jesus, but I'll also deny you three times when the crunch is on. And I'm thinking, oi, we seem to be so double-minded sometimes about our commitment to this Jesus that, what does it say in 2 Timothy, Dion, even when we are unfaithful, he is still faithful.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Brad, isn't the Bible just beautiful? I mean, it's just a wonderful telling of the reality of the human condition and God's grace, you know. So that's a really beautiful summary there. So yes, this Sunday is traditionally the beginning of Holy Week, and it begins with Palm Sunday. And Holy Week shows us those two aspects of the human life, the human condition. You know, on this Sunday, the crowd shout Hosanna to the King of Kings. They welcome him into Jerusalem. And by Friday, when they're presented with the opportunity to free him or a murderer, they call Barabbas, you know, free Barabbas and crucify Jesus. And, you know, this just shows us some of the complexity there. Just to say to our listeners, Matthew 21 verses 1 to 11 is the story of the telling of this Jesus riding into Jerusalem on a colt, on a donkey. And it's a very, very beautiful and interesting passage. But Brad, actually, I was also struck by what you just mentioned. You know, for me, the thing was, you know, the crowds, and you see often in the Gospels that this amorphous group, this faceless group, in Greek they call them ho-ochlos, the large masses of the poor gather to greet Jesus. But the real betrayal does seem to be those ones who had journeyed with him so closely. And in this case, particularly Peter. And so as I was reading this passage this week, the Matthew 21 passage, it reminded me of Peter. And then I was suddenly taken to John 21. So you might remember that's after the resurrection. It's after Easter. It's when Jesus rises from the tomb. The disciples have begun to scatter. Peter himself, for example, has gone back to doing his old job. He returns to being a fisherman. He thinks he's disappointed Jesus so much that how could he possibly have anything to do with the Lord? And then we encounter Jesus on that beach in John 21. So what I was really thinking about this week, Brad, is what kind of king is Jesus and what kind of disciples are we? So maybe just to try and address that first one quickly, the first thing is that we realize is Jesus is not the kind of king that we invent. He's the kind of king that we have to receive. Now, Palm Sunday is a bit of a tragedy in many ways, because what the people wanted was a king like Herod.
Yes.
They wanted a king who would come into the city, overthrow the Roman rulers, and take up the throne. But Jesus comes to say, no, my journey is not to a throne, but to a cross. And he says, yes, I'm Lord, but I'm the Lord who washes feet. I'm the judge, yes, indeed, but I'm the judge who forgives. Of course, I'm the king,
yeah,
the one who created the whole earth. But I do it not in power, but in service. But we also need to remember that Jesus is a different kind of king. He is the shepherd who lays down his life for the sheep. So that's the first thing that strikes me. When I sometimes listen to preachers, when I see people using Jesus in their personal lives, in public, I think, I wonder if Jesus recognizes himself in some of that kind of dominionism, that kind of, you know, hyper-masculine power that we often project upon him, and whether Jesus truly isn't the kind of king who comes to us riding on a donkey, the one who says, I'm heading towards the cross and I want you to follow him. So the second thing that strikes me is this question of what kind of disciples are we? And of course, the truth is we are the kind of disciples who in our best moments can recognize Jesus and cry Hosanna. And we must long for that. We must say, Lord, show us your glory. Teach us to honor you as king in our daily lives. But of course, Brad, the reality is we are also the ones who cry, crucify him. And we do it in all of these little ways. You know, when someone blasphemes and we say nothing, when someone, slanders someone else and we do not tell the truth, when we are tempted with corruption or a kind of sinful behavior, whether it's alcohol or sex or whatever it is, and we give in to that, that's when we crucify Jesus. And I think, Brad, we need to recognize that we've got to work against that. We've got to build a kind of closeness to Jesus that helps us to avoid that. But maybe just to say to our listeners today, many of us live with regrets of things we should have done and didn't do, or things we shouldn't have done and did do. And this is where I think John 21 is so precious. You know, when Jesus meets Peter on the beach, he doesn't condemn him. Rather, what he asks him is, he says, Peter, do you love me? That's all he asks. He just wants to know, do you love me? Not what did you do, what didn't you do, but do you love me? And when he responds, Jesus says, good, you tell me that you love me, now feed my sheep. Now show me by your actions that you love me. So maybe that's a bit of an encouragement for us today. The king meets us daily, in our daily lives, in our homes, in our workplaces, throughout the week. And let's cry Hosanna. And we sometimes crucify him. Let's answer the call of love by saying, Lord, I'm here to serve you.
Oh, that's beautiful. Dion, I've been working my way through 1st and 2nd Kings, and I've come to realize, and this is true, you don't need to look too much further than some world leaders, but there's vanity and ego and oppression seems to be their default setting for those who served as kings of Judah and kings of Israel, and so few of them ever were pleasing to God's heart. I mean, there's a handful. I mean, Hezekiah, one of those that stands out as being the kind of king that pleased God. And they weren't even supposed to have a king anyway, and so they got their way against God's better judgment. But anyway, that's us, right? Making choices about what we want to do because we think we know better, and God often steps out of the way and lets us do these things. But the same applies for parenting or fathers. We have either no father set an example, or perhaps we have a father that sets a terrible example, apart from those that are excellent, of course. So we end up going into this whole relationship with God as king and as father with this completely warped idea of what either of those should actually represent. So we almost start out as if feeling, well, you know, backing Jesus here is like a step backwards. It's not exactly how we see success or pursuit of greatness in this world in which we live. So getting behind a king who's really just wanting us to love him and love others, and love ourselves, yeah, sometimes feels like a little bit of an anticlimax for us, as if it's, well, that's too easy, or that's too simple, or that's not really, you know, tough enough. So we actually have quite a lot to learn about who Jesus is, despite the titles that we've given him, and rightly so, for us to really walk a great walk with Jesus and to be the kind of people that he wants us to be, because it's so counterintuitive to what we see around us represents what it means to be a great leader or king by the world standards.
Yeah, no, absolutely, Brad. And of course, you know, this is the challenge. Wherever there's a vacuum of truth, you know, lies step in. And, you know, Jesus didn't need to perform his authority. He didn't need to parade it. He didn't need to belittle or humiliate or threaten or overpower others, because he knew that he was king. He knows that he's king. He knows he has authority. And it strikes me often these small people, and often they're small men, you know, they're people who live with a kind of inferiority. Mm. They're threatening others. They're overperforming their masculinity. That shows that there's a deep woundedness, a brokenness there. And what Jesus wants from us, I think particularly as men and fathers, as brothers, as husbands, is to be secure in what he's made us to be. And, you know, the interesting thing about Jesus is Jesus knows what to do with authority and privilege. And what do you do with it? You use it to serve others and you give it away.
Wow.
And that's what I think the Lord wants from us. The best men I know, the most masculine, the most kingly that I know, are the ones who said, I want to be a person for others. I want to use my power and authority to bless others.
Yeah, that's how we change the world. Dion, love that. Thank you for letting us get started.
This insert was brought to you by Radio K Pulpit, 7 to 9 a.m. Please visit kpulpit.co.za.